Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com.
Tennessee sounds perfect.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. That is Mr. Max Williams. Woo. They call me Ben Bolin. Noel, I can't believe we've done it again. We accidentally made an awesome two-parter. You know, we did it.
We did it, and we're not going to apologize for it either. So just here's your part two. Enjoy it, or don't. See if we care. No, we actually really do care. Please enjoy it. Here's part two of the story of the weird European guy that drained the Mediterranean to make a supercontinent. Let's talk a little bit about how does one manage this, right? So it's put into place. Everything goes off without a hitch. Everything's built, you know, with the cooperation of all parties. Who's in charge? If Europe kind of led the project and it's one of their guys that's sort of at the helm, how does this thing get staffed and what kind of governing body has to be created to keep it humming, right? Because this would require a giant hydroelectric power plant that would be situated in the Gibraltar Dam that would supply power for Europe and Africa. The idea was that it would be run by an independent body who would have the power to switch off the energy supply to any individual country that created a threat to peace.
Dangerous.
How about that? I mean, this really is some Star Trek type shit. Max, wasn't there a period in Star Trek or a season or one of the iterations where like they don't even have currency because they're all so interconnected and like that's sort of the Federation's job is to keep the rogue, you know, states or whatever from like screwing up this intergalactic peace?
That is a common misnomer. So the Federation does not have currency. No one works for money, but like something like the Ferengi Alliance, they use gold-pressed latinum as their currency.
Mm-hmm. I just tricked you into showing everybody what a nerd you are, bro. And I love it.
I'm proud of how much
I'm
of a nerd I am.
I'm living for this.
I watch Star Trek
every night.
Tell me
more about the Ferengi's currency. I just watched
a great episode of DS9 last night.
Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, DS9. Deep Space Nine.
Well, I think other people might not know, Max.
Well, they need to do their research then.
Okay, what do you think about Odo?
Like, best character of all time.
but Max, though, seriously, like, I mean, do you see connections here between the kind of idyllic utopian world of Star Trek and what this guy is trying to achieve? I mean, the more I'm reading into this, the less fascist it seems. Like, it actually seems pretty even-handed. And if everyone played along, could have some positive outcomes.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely does have that kind of utopian thing, but it's really in that guise of it's like utopian for a very select amount of people.
Yes.
And it's really, it's closer to Star Trek as in it's very much in sci-fi with this work. I mean, like, just the impact of like what you would do to this to like, you know, the environment is terrible.
Of course.
I do want to put one more fun Star Trek little note in here. Because people forget this, but Star Trek being very much a 1960s show, The origin stories of the Federation comes from World War III, which is a nuclear war that kills off almost all mankind. So it comes kind of from that same fear base. We're all going to like mutually assured like annihilation that like this plan kind of has as well. Because that's what this guy's kind of thinking. It's like, if we go to war again, we're probably all just going to die.
Yeah, the old idea of like World War II was fought with nuclear weapons. World War III will be fought with sticks and stones. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's a real fear. And he wanted to get into the hearts and minds of people. So he was he's like one of those really thirsty investigative journalists or pundits or TED talkers, I call them. He wants time on radio programs. He wants to give talks. He even has an Atlantropa symphony commissioned. There's Atlantropa poetry. He was hoping that if he gets enough popular support, if he gets enough of the hoi polloi talking about this, then the politicians will follow suit. But this did seem really utopian.
Ambitious.
Yeah, well, utopian in the not good sense of the word. Like, utopian itself means something that is optimistic but likely unachievable. Mm-hmm. And in this sense, one thing that really stood out to me when we were doing research about this is that it fundamentally alters the social hierarchy and the order of power. So now you can be descended from a millennia long line of rulers, but the real power is going to be whomever it is at the top that can turn the grid on or off. So it's like, imagine like the president of the U.S. has to ultimately pay obeisance to we have something called Georgia power, but they have to pay obeisance to like Federated Pan-American power, and they don't get to make the calls anymore. So that, if anything, seemed like the most difficult part of the equation. Like, they were like, sure, you could build a giant dam, but getting people to agree with each other, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Well, and there was a lot of, like, that was absolutely, like, a deal breaker for this whole project, is the idea that they could get people, or at the very least, like, strong-arm them into agreeing, because it would require an investment from, the participating nations that would have been so hefty, right, that it would have left them without enough funds or, you know, human capital to actually participate in a war in the first place, right? So there was all of these very like high-minded ideological kind of things built into this whole project. And when you're talking about like the sort of fine line between a utopia and a dystopia, or like what is a utopia for some is a dystopia for others at the bottom, it reminds me of what I think is one of the greatest reboots, sequels, whatever you want to call it, of all time, Mad Max Fury Road, where you have warlord Immortan Joe who essentially controls the water supply and is able to kind of keep all of these, you know, poorer people just at his beck and call and kind of like, you know, worshiping at his feet, literally like a god, because he gives them a drop of water every now and then. And like the circumstances are so bad. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And this, you know, is the kind of thing that on paper maybe seems, oh, this is such a great idea. I don't know, I've been like praising parts of it in theory, but it's the kind of thing where like humans are inherently corrupt and corruptible. And I think if there was a person with their hand on the button or the switch, and they had what would seem like some eugenics kind of ideas, like it would appear Sorgel has, or this, you know, sort of the way he's thinking of African people, for example, could be a very dangerous equation.
The residents of Portugal will cease all political protest and dissent if they want to survive the winter.
Exactly. You
know, like that kind of stuff. And Portugal's a terrible example. Norway would be a better example.
Yeah, but Portugal's got pretty nice weather, but exactly.
Yeah. I have a friend who just moved to Portugal, and I can't wait to go visit. But
I'd love to go too.
Yeah, we should go. We should go and do a live show. Write to us. Tell us where we should do a live show. Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avila Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at AvalonWaterways.com.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. When we ask ourselves whether this plan is really feasible, is where we run into something interesting, because nothing in history occurs in a vacuum, as we so often say. This guy wasn't the only guy trying to change the world through the power of dams. From 1923 to 1932, engineers in the Netherlands actually built a dam between a place called the Zuiderzee, and the North Sea. And this, the Netherlands is awesome at reclaiming land. So Sorgel saw people successfully reclaiming land from the ocean. And he believed that despite the massive size, the massive scale of this project, it would be feasible. He probably thought it was going to be easier than it was, just because, you know, in the brainstorming process, anything is possible. But he would always point out the Netherlands example. And he's like, look, these folks are using dams and engineering and the power of technology to create homes, you know, and they created the province of Flevoland, which is now home to 400,000 people. So on some scale, this works. There is validity to it. The question is, can you do it with, you know, the Mediterranean Sea?
Can you indeed? Sorgel certainly believed you could. In fact, he thought it was going to be a snap. He very much was high on his own supply of engineering prowess, because he had modeled it after, you know, some of the projects we just talked about that were already underway on a much, much, much smaller scale. Damming the Mediterranean, on the other hand, was going to be a much more tricky concern, I think, because the waters come in from these two major arteries, the Atlantic coming in from the Strait of Gibraltar in the west, and the Black Sea coming in from the Dardanelles on the east, like we said. So he thought that just by like cutting off the flow of these two straits, the Mediterranean would easily reduce its sea level. So he decided to give it a go. he was completely convinced that this would work in the same way that, you know, smaller damming operations had worked. So we have to think, though, I mean, you know, we today when we think of like really, really impressive feats of engineering and concerning dams, we think of things like China's Three Gorges Dams or the Hoover Dam, for example. These are just absolutely megalithic structures that are, you know, sites to behold unto themselves. He didn't have any contemporary analogs to what he was doing. This would have been a very first of its kind. One thing, however, that Sorgel did not consider was the impact on the environment, like Max was talking about. The increased salinity of the water that would have remained in the Mediterranean Sea could have, in fact, killed off a ton of the plant and animal life. And the patterns of rain, because such a massive body of water, lowering it that much, could have actually affected precipitation patterns. And it could have potentially left, you know, folks in the wake of the giant dam at Gibraltar very, very exposed to things like tsunamis or earthquakes or, you know, terrorist attacks, something we would have thought of today. Highly recommend a great article on bigthink.com that kind of goes through some of the what ifs of this whole scenario by the very talented Frank Jacobs.
So we talked about the public. How did the public in Germany feel? They loved it. They were all about this. He was a media darling. He even founded the Atlantropa Institute to promote this utopian idea. But you're saying, Ben, I just Googled the Mediterranean. It's still a thing. There's no Atlantropa. You're right. Atlantropa never took off because he did not get the support of one big demographic in Germany at the time, which unfortunately was the Nazi Party. They wanted to expand, for sure. That was one of their things. But they wanted to expand more eastward than south. And once they seized power in Germany, Sorgel did try to pitch the idea to him. But they said, nah, we're not really interested in building dams. We want to conquer the Lebensraum, the old-fashioned way. We want to invade places. We want to take over these neighboring countries. And then, oddly enough, I didn't know this, but for a time, after World War II, for like a very brief time, the European Allied powers were like, I don't know, Sorgel, pitch it to us. How do we drain the Mediterranean? And, you know, we're styling here a bit, folks, but imagine like partway through his pitch, people start, you know, looking at each other sidelong and they're like, wow, no, this is crazy. We can't do this. And we've got to rebuild regular Europe before we make Atlantropa. And that's, you know, that's a valid criticism of the plan. But then something else happens. Nuclear power comes into the fray. This is pre-Chernobyl. So a lot of people, when they're thinking of peaceful nuclear power, they're thinking of it as a superior solution to hydroelectricity. Sorgel doesn't give up. He defends these ideas all the way to his deathbed. Well, not really his deathbed, all the way to the street, all the way to his last bicycle ride when he is hit fatally by a car in 1952 while on the way to hold a speech on, you guessed it, the Atlantropa Project. And of just a few years after his death in 1960, the Institute, the Atlantropa Institute, officially was closed. Gone, but not forgotten. I think the legacy is there, right, Noel? Right, Max? We've got an epilogue here.
There's an epilogue, yeah, for sure. Definitely lives on in, you know, some other creative minds and imaginations. For example, Philip K. Dick, the author of The Man in the High Castle, creates a world where the Nazis, or the Axis powers, rather, won World War II, and the U.S. gets cut up into three different regions with the Nazi kind of puppet government in the east, and then an area under Japanese occupation in the west, and a neutral buffer zone between the two. And of course, that's the television show version, which is loosely based on the book by Philip K. Dick, mm-hmm. Published in 1962. And in Philip K. Dick's novel, the Axis powers actually drained the Mediterranean in order to create new tracts of farmland, which is another big part, all the land that it would free up if you lowered the water level of the Mediterranean. And of course, this book is widely considered to be a commentary on fascism. I think we see how the idea of a utopia, when the intention is to kind of like other certain parts of the world, you know, can in and of itself be a form of fascism.
Yeah, and it's weird because science fiction authors in general for a long time love bringing this concept up. It's one of those just fantastic what if alternative history stories. Soviet sci-fi writer Grigory Grebnev also speculated on another future where it wasn't the Axis powers that built the dam, but the socialist revolution. And in his story, there's a small band of Nazi terrorists who are hiding out in the North Pole, and they want to launch an attack on this dam system because it's a glorious achievement of the revolution. To learn more about that, check out an article by our friends at Atlas Obscura. I love it. You guys, if you're listening, you always kill it with the titles. The Bonkers Real Life Plan to Drain the Mediterranean and Merge Africa and Europe by Toon Lambrix. And then, of course, you know, we mentioned the Star Trek, the motion picture analog here with Admiral Kirk, I think, by that point, standing on a huge dam near Gibraltar, and the dam blocks the Atlantic Ocean from the Mediterranean. So Roddenberry was definitely aware of this. We see it in multiple other works of sci-fi, but these days, in real terms, you're probably only going to see ideas about the Atlantropa Project in museums. You might see it in German high schools, actually, where it's used as a question on a physics exam. The question is something like, it requires you to calculate the lowering of the water level in the Mediterranean. And the real screwy part of this, that question when you're taking this exam, is the question mentions the project as if it is actually going to happen, and that you, the kid taking the test, can help the Atlantropa Project by solving the math problem. It's really weird, but it's such a fascinating story. Even if it's not feasible, I do, at the very heart of it, you know, I'm trying to be more optimistic these days, guys. I do like the idea that science can unify people in a way that politics could not, and maybe save us as a species from these corners we seem to continually paint ourselves in.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we have story. Sappy music on that.
Oh, I love it. I love all the choices you've made here, Max. This is a story, though, that I think does an interesting job of combining kind of like ideology and science and politics kind of all into one crazy scheme that was maybe a little bit beyond the powers of all of those things to actually right. accomplish, right? Because yeah. the science of it, I mean, you know, could you do this? You know, I mean, why have we not done this yet? If it was such a great idea. I think we've talked about some of the drawbacks for sure in terms of like how it could affect the salinity of the water and the flora and fauna and all that. But, you know, it's interesting. I always wonder, like, why do we not use more hydroelectric power? And I think it's probably largely because of reasons like what we're talking about here, because I think to date, or at least at this point in history, only around 17% of the world's power comes from hydroelectricity.
And, you know, there are hard geographical limits to, you know, just to where you can build a dam, right? And it's kind of like geothermal energy in that respect. But there's something else they didn't think about, which is the Mediterranean Sea could disappear in the future. To paraphrase Dennis Reynolds, the continental drift. You didn't think about the drift, you bitch.
Sorry. Got to account for the drift.
You've got to account for the drift. Continental drift is a real thing. This is a living, active planet. So we don't know what kind of long tail consequences might occur when we have fundamentally altered the shape of the continents this way, because those tectonic plates are still doing their thing. And I think Sorgel didn't really deeply consider what the results of this vast plan would be. Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever been.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at AvalonWaterways.com.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Everybody, I think, is familiar with the idea of continental drift and tectonic plates. That's the reason why the continents today are located in the places they're located. As you are hearing today's show, the African continent and the European continent are already very slowly creeping toward each other across the Mediterranean. And eventually, they're going to collide. Eventually, they are going to do Sorgel's work for him, creating a mega continent called Eurafrica. And when these two continents meet, most geologists will tell you that the Mediterranean is going to close up and it's going to become mountainous because the land is hitting itself. You know, this is ridiculous. We're an audio podcast. I don't know why I'm like illustrating this to you guys with my hands, but that's like my hands are making a mountain.
Nothing like a good visual aid in a podcast, especially when you get meta with it, just describe it verbally. But let's hear a little bit from another architect, another very well-regarded architect named Eric Mendelsohn, who gives a kind of modern account of why this was, surprise, surprise, potentially a good idea. And before we get to that, also just want to note that there were quite a few folks that believed this was a good idea, including the makers of a 1950 film entitled Atlantropa. The New Continent, Land of the Future.
I love those Epcot vibes.
Oh, totally. And there were other architects who were fanboys, like, again, Eric Mendelsohn and a guy named Peter Behrens. Mendelsohn was a German-Jewish architect who had to flee Germany in 1933. In 1932, a couple of months before he immigrated, Mendelsohn actually supported the Landtropa plan in a manifesto-type fiery speech that he gave in Zurich. He believed that Landtropa was a chance for the future. It offered some hope to kind of dig the country out of this slump. The social crisis that Europe was in the midst of, that kind of was already there,
the groundwork had been laid, but World War One had absolutely blown up completely. Everything from the politics of the time to the economics to the architecture, all of these things he believed were tied together, and that this was going to create a what he referred to as world restructuring movement that was driven by something that he also revered highly and thought was the only chance of saving the soul, I guess, even of Europe, which was technology. Mm-hmm. And Mendelssohn had this to say. The upcoming world will allow the nations their characteristics, but unites them into a comprehensive community. Because the problems of the new world affect all people as one, we cannot retreat. The speed of traffic has crowded the nations close together, forces them into larger units in order to avoid getting crushed. We must achieve a state of methodical exchange, of food and capabilities of production and ingenuity. From this, great supranational tasks are needed that create a new space, new territory, new workspace. The Canal de Dumère comes to mind, connecting Marseille and Bordeaux, the Mediterranean and the English Channel, the Panropa Project, which wants to recover Europe's actual fruit country. This one's a doozy, Ben. Why don't we split it up? Let's take part two your way.
Yeah, this is a long one, but we think it's important. It's beautifully written. Mendelssohn continues, "These are productive, technical, global tasks that want to finally, logically value a century of technological inventions. Such tasks finally bring man's reign over technology so that technology serves him rather than enslaves him. Because technology and machines are only tools in the hands of man, simply a new element of his knowing about the world, as once water, fire, air, and soil. Because if we recognize the elements, then we will overcome chaos. If we build from the elements, then a new world will emerge." We'll skip ahead a little bit, get to the banger. At the very end, he says, "Therefore, we believe in a new world, in a life of reason and order in politics, economics, and public life. The belief in the accuracy of this interpretation is the deep significance of me, the creative significance of this crisis." And we found that via the excellent work, Noel, you mentioned earlier at the top, Cabinet Magazine.
Indeed. Wonderful source. One that I don't think we've spent much time with before this episode. So going to check out some more stuff from cabinetmagazine.org very soon. And the thing is, you know, this wasn't the only massively, you know, big swing, large scale plan to add land to Europe by draining a major body of water, was it, Ben?
No, you're right, Noel. We mentioned the work in the Netherlands, but there was another one taking place in the North Sea. We're pulling this from Modern Mechanics Magazine, September of 1930. And they actually name-check the Netherlands in this quote as well, don't they?
Yes, indeed. The magazine comments, "If the extensive schemes for the drainage of the North Sea are carried out according to the plan illustrated above, which was conceived by a group of eminent English scientists, 100,000 square miles will be added to the overcrowded continent of Europe. The reclaimed land will be walled in with enormous dikes similar to the Netherland dikes to protect it from the sea, and the various rivers flowing into the North Sea will have their courses diverted to different outlets by means of canals." Who doesn't love a good canal? Walk along a canal, you know, canal poetry. If anybody,
you can live in canal boats.
Also true. Yeah. If anyone's in the Toast of London with Matt Berry, you know about canal poetry. And you know what else has been poetry, Ben? This two-part episode on the one weird European man's wild scheme to drain the Mediterranean and create a new, somewhat weirdly utopian, racist supercontinent.
But yeah, big look upon my works, ye mighty vibes. Yes, this is a wild ride. This is one of those that really rabbit holed us. And I don't think we knew how deep this story would go. And the strange thing is just how widely accepted it was as a feasible plan for so long. Just like Ridiculous History. Thanks, as always, for tuning in, everybody. Noel, thank you so much, as always. My main man there. Thank you, of course, to super producer Max Williams. And thank you, the one and only Casey Pegram. I've heard a lot of chatter. There's some noise on the internet asking what happened to our good buddy. He is well. He is healthy. And you may hear from him sooner than later.
Yeah, I heard some tremors on that one, too. Sorry, I've been watching a lot of Succession lately, so I only speak in corporate douchebag lingo now. Huge thanks to super producer Max Williams and his brother Alex Williams, who composed this theme that you're hearing in your very ears right now. Jonathan Strickland, the Quizster, long may he reign. And I think we'll probably have him back before the year is out, too. Who knows? Maybe we'll do some kind of, like, year-end thing. Podcast people do those, right?
Yeah, and we're both people and podcast people. I'd love to get the whole gang together. You know what I mean? We're still going to have our friends from Ridiculous Romance come aboard. We're going to go check on their show. We might even be able to sweet talk Gabe Lussier in there as well. Shout out to you, Gabe. If you're tuning in, check out This Day in History class. What a ride. If I, you know, I keep thinking, though, the Mediterranean isn't the worst place to build a supercontinent. I guess it would be easier than building one in the middle of the Pacific. But now I'm just going to think about that. How do we terraform?
I don't know, Ben. That's some sci-fi stuff right there, too. Folks, let us know. You can write to us at ridiculous@iheartmedia.com. We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills, into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.